The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 25th of September, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Kyle Frail, Chief Executive Officer of Open Orphan. ORPH ticker there. And Kyle explains how they are targeting profitable growth and a return to profitability in 2020. Also on the podcast, Martin Higginson, Chief Executive Officer of Emotion, IMMO. And Martin covers the highlights from their interim results and current progress, which hopes to see them reach monthly break-even by Q1 2020. Also, Nick Lee, Non-Executive Director of Perez Investments, P-I-R-I, tickle there. And Nick covers their recent update and explains why they hope to amend their investment strategy. Also, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, if you receive an RNS via the app, which is free to download, and you like the contents of that RNS, by all means, hit that thumbs up icon, and it may feature on the podcast and also on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cahill Friel, Chief Executive Officer of Open Orphan. That's ORPH ticker. Cahill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, a pleasure to talk to you. How are you?
Good, thanks. Now, you've had, you've released what's normally, a big news release, but for you, it's not so much because, like I said, the interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June, and I think you readmitted to the stock market on the 28th, so it's pretty much like 2 days, really, when it's really relevant, but we'll dig into some bits because there are some interesting things in there and some statements, of course, in there. But before we do that, as always, Kyle, if someone's listening right now has never heard of Open Orphan, could you just summarise what you're about, please?
Absolutely, Justin. Yeah, look, we're calling today's event a non-event update because it applies to really 2 days of the company we were in control of. The other 6 months was under the former management team. But look, what we're doing, we're building as a roll-up a small number of pharmaceutical services companies across Europe to build a European pharma consulting business with a focus on rare disease and orphan drugs. And along the way, we're not going to take any risks, no trials, none of this boom or bust that's associated with life science and pharmaceuticals. We're buying businesses, 25% net profits, bolt a couple together, we're buying them at 1x revenues and getting rated, re-rated appropriately the 2 to 3x revenues for our peer group has. And then we have then 2 digital platforms that we'll cross-sell to those customers and one under the virtual rep. And the really exciting one in recent weeks is taking a huge leap forward, the genomic database business, where we're building Europe's largest rare disease genomics database for rare disease patients in Europe.
Yeah, so you've got this one side of the business, like you say, is going to be generating cash and is a service plus business, cost plus business, service to the pharmaceutical industry. And then you've got that data platform, which I think is very much sort of a blue sky opportunity and scalable. So at the moment, where are you on these projects? Because, of course, the first part of the business, you're going to acquire businesses. Where are you in respect to that?
Right. First one, really what we did, we acquired Venn for $4 million. And it did $14.5 million last year. And we're turning that around. So the focus has been 24/7 for the last 2.5-3 months, fixing Venn. Venn lost money last year. It will lose a small bit more money tonight on Christmas. It will make money next year. We're not in the business of having loss-making businesses in our hands. So where we are, Venn is in the process of being fixed. How do you fix a loss-making business? You reduce the overheads, i.e. offices and staff, because it's a cost-plus business, or increase revenues. We're active on both, increasing revenues, reducing the overheads. And look, being frank, it's losing staff. We may have, at the moment, staff count is probably down 10 or 15% in the last 3 months and going a little further. But we're also increasing revenues. And then bolt on, the really exciting bit, we guided the market. We do one before Christmas. I think we're pretty confident that will be done. We have a bundle of them in the hopper. We're looking at them. And there is certainly one we can get done that will transform a revenue line We're not going to issue a whole bundle of shares. We're buying these companies at 1x revenues. Shares will be paid over 4 years, so there's not going to be huge dilution. And I emphasize that is the management team own 30% of Open Orphan. I personally contributed 2 million to it. So I'm the person and the management team do not want to be issuing shares and getting dilution. So that's not what we're going to do. We're not going to be raising loads of money either. We're going to use our money very carefully. And that's the services side. So there's going to be no frights, none of this double or quits. It comes with clinical trials. We get paid regardless whether a drug fails or succeeds in the market. And then our genomics database, we're building, we've set a target to get 10,000 rare disease patients' data in by Christmas next year. That is the target. We're well under the way. We have a notional value at €5,000 per patient, but we can resell access to those data. So that gives us a potential 50 million valuation on a business that we've already fully invested in, and it's starting to get ready to go live. So that's kind of the summary where we are in regards to those. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And it's good you mentioned that about the acquisitions, because I know you said you have ambitions for Open Orphan for the market cap to increase, you know, quite drastically. But of course, you can increase market cap just by issuing shares. But someone has said to me, well, what about the share price? Will the share price rise as well? And so you just said that. So it's worth underlining that, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, as the largest shareholder and the largest single investor, I am very, very focused on not being, as we all say, Bud Light Cheers and Toys to diluted to infinity and beyond. Look, we only issue shares on a rising, on a doubling or tripling of that share price. And that's where we're quite active in the coming weeks and months on promoting our shares, talking to people, giving them the story. But we're not going to issue a massive tranche and dilute us. It'll be carefully managed. We all have been through a number of IPOs before. We've seen where they all go wrong. And look, our target is, my other company I set up, I didn't realize it was only 4 years and 1 month, was Amarin Pharmaceuticals. I just saw Joe Wiley announce it was only August 2015. He and I set that up in our office. Amarin did drift a bit that way for a number of years. However, as of today, Amarin has completed a 60 million fundraise, acquired a 300 million company, and the share price is up 50% in the last couple of months, and on target, I would say double over the next year to get to 300 or 400 million. So that's the plans for Open Orphan. It happened successfully. Now, it took a little longer in Amarin because it had its own products. It's finally moved into serious sales arena. We're going on the benefit of that learnings. We're not going to be taking those risks, and we're going to work things up on a quarterly basis going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that you've, I mean, I know I've heard you say this before and it makes sense. The way you've, you know, evolved your approach, because you've learned from previous IPOs, and like you say, you've been involved in very high risk, you know, oil and gas and pharmaceuticals, and now you've sort of, now you're realising almost that, hang on, data is a blue sky opportunity, and Service Plus, you know, to pharmaceutical agencies, it's low cost or low risk, you know. So it's almost like you've evolved this and honed this strategy in, yeah?
Yeah, I've an old friend many years ago said, Carl, if you're not earning, you better be learning. So being frank, look, Amarin has worked out really well for all of us. Anybody who hung in there, it's been a fantastic investment, but it was high risk. If the trial failed, the share price would have collapsed. They have expanded through acquiring revenue. They're now 135 million revenues. And just watching the experience there, it was the consulting companies, the guys selling the picks and shovels to the big pharma that make huge money. Brendan Buckley, our chairman's company, went from market cap of 800 million to 8 billion. Share price, 10x, not just market cap, but share price has had a 10x appreciation in his last 7 years through careful acquisitions, no risks. It's in the clinical services and consulting, doesn't do any trial risk. And that's Brendan's guiding hand. He said, look, a 10x uplift in that share price he had in his previous company where he was a chief medical officer, and market cap, I'd say as well, but on share prices we're focused. So look, that's the guiding hand in our company, tiny management team, and let's see where we go on a quarterly basis, but very, very optimistic. It's on the right track as we speak.
Yeah, and the line that sticks out in these results really here for me is targeting profitable growth and a return to profitability in 2020. Now, you can target it, but how confident are you, Kyle?
Well, I think I mentioned on with an analyst conference call that will be live on our website shortly after our results this morning. I said, look, an iron fist and a velvet glove. An iron fist is taking out the costs, reducing staff numbers, losing offices, and the velvet glove is trying to get them to cross-sell, trying to get people to sell more, bring more revenues in. So look, being perfectly honest, Venn hasn't been making money for a long number of years. I'm not in the business of hanging around pouring money in. We are fixing it. It is a cost-plus business. It should not be losing money. We didn't put this company together to lose money, and we're absolutely certain as we turn the turn of the year, we're going to be in a profitable business, and that's, as you know, 3 months. And so no more losses going forward beyond Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and so are you hoping, like you said, to get that first acquisition done before Christmas?
Oh, absolutely. I'd say the way you do it, I'm originally a corporate finance person. I've been paid 15 years buying and selling people's companies. And to get a company done, you actually have to have 10 or 15 at the table. There are going to be a number of them disappointed. We've run them all to the wall. We have a bundle of acquisitions. Any one of them we can do. And the plan is there's one of them at the moment we would like, and we intend completing this side of Christmas. And it's not going to bring 2, 3, 4, 5 million revenues. It's going to bring substantially more revenues, and I think we'll be well on our way to achieving the target of substantial more revenues by the turn of the year, not going into next year. All done before Christmas is the plan at the moment.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, you know what I'm going to ask for now, Cahill. Three reasons, if someone's listening, why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, first reason is we're highly motivated. We're heavily invested in our own personal cash. We're probably one of the largest stakes by any management team on AIM. So we're motivated, as hopefully our shareholders will be. Second reason is that we're not going to take risks. We're going to build profitable business, bolt them on, consolidate them. We've all been through at least one successful exit before. We've all been through one IPO before. And then the third reason is that we're all in our 50s, and Brendan in the 60s, we're not going to be hanging around this for too long. This is an 18-month journey in, out, shake it all around, and find a successful exit for ourselves and all our shareholders. And I emphasize 18 months. You can never do that if we're trying to build product, develop a product. This is basically an acquisition target, very opportunist, and polish ourselves up and be ready for sale.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, Cahill. Hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin, it's a pleasure as always. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Higginson, CEO of Emotion Group. That's IMMO ticker. Martin, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks very much, Justin.
Now, you've had two bits of news today. You've had your interim results for the 6 months ended the 30th of June and a partnership update. So we'll dig into that. But before we do, as always, if someone is tuning in for the first time, Martin, has not heard about the company and don't know what you do, basically, can you summarise what Emotion is about, please?
Yeah, look, we're in the exciting sector of virtual reality. So we deliver highly immersive experiences. We do that. We create the experience ourselves. And then we to motion platforms, and then we put the whole thing into partners. And when I say partners, we put them into places like sort of Sea Life, Madame Tussauds, aquariums, zoos, and we do this on our balance sheet, and then we share the revenue only on a 50-50 basis with our partner. So it's a true partnership relationship where what we're interested in doing is building something for the long term. So nearly all our relationships are 3 years, but we see them sort of stretching much further than that. And as this whole edutainment market evolves and zoos and aquariums become sort of, you know, more dependent on sort of digital species, because you're not going to be able to keep large animals in captivity, then, you know, we can really help them through that journey and help them to evolve this sort of new immersive sort of digital world.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting area that we're in, and an exciting area that's, you know, really starting to deliver results.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's dig into the highlights from the interim results. Take us through some of the more exciting bits, if you could, Martin.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we had decent revenues in the first 1.3 million. So, you know, we're up on the previous year. So, we're making solid progress. I think the most important thing that we highlighted in those interim results was the revenues for July and August, obviously during the summer months. But, revenue of nearly £1 million for those 2 months in aggregate. So over £900,000. So, you know, you can really start seeing that our quality of partners is driving that revenue, and the decision to move our focus solely into sort of a partnership model is starting to pay dividends. So I think, you know, that's the real key driver for us. We're seeing that our partners outperform the general sort of revenue per headsets that we've seen historically. And then on top of that, we're seeing the aquariums outperforming the partners as well. So our focus on sort of educational partners is the right thing. So aquariums, zoos, science centres, these are going to be the real bedrocks of our sort of future as we move forward.
Yeah, that is encouraging, isn't it? Just 2 months, say July, August, almost, you know, not far off the entire 6 months of H1. So that's encouraging. And also, mentioned that Robin, the chairman, said you are determined to sort of hit 1,000 installed headsets by the end of 2020. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, look, we can see the runway. You know, we exhibited at two shows recently, one in New Orleans, the Aquarium and Zoo Association show, and then the European version of that in Valencia. And, you know, from those two shows, we've got sort of 50 hot leads, virtually all of aquariums. So we can really start seeing the runway, and we can start seeing the runway to 1,000 headsets. We know where they're going to come from. Now it's just about execution, and we can see that. We can see how we're going to get to the EBITDA break even, and we can see the runway to 1,000 headsets. So the pathway is very clear now. We know what sector we're in. We've got no competition in this sector. It's the barriers to entry are very, very high. So it's really up to us to sort of, you know, go and do the land grab now.
Yeah, I suppose what's encouraging, like you say, reaching monthly break-even by Q1 next year is very good. But that's, you know, 1,000 installed headsets. There's two sides to that, isn't it? Like you said, there's the demand and the ability for you to satisfy that demand. And you're confident you can get that? You can do that?
Yeah, look, we've got the right products, so we've got the right experiences, we've got the right motion platforms, so we know we can deliver all those. We've got stuff that is genuinely performing, so we've got the surrounds that are make the whole thing look really good. We've driven the price of those surrounds down. We've got an amazing installation team, an amazing performance team that is really focused in driving revenue and looking at how revenue with partners. So we've got all the right things in place, and I think, you know, really now it's just for us to sort of go and execute that. And you know, the new launch of things like our Shark Dive, where you can get up close and personal with tiger sharks, you know, it is an amazing piece of sort of VR cinematography, and it's something that you're not going to see anywhere else. So we launched that in the London Aquarium down at the centre on the South Bank. You know, anybody gets a chance, go and have a look at that. It's doing great numbers. And everybody that's coming, going and visiting that is giving it a star review.
Yeah, and I suppose that you say you've got these exhibitions and you say the aquarium sector's outperforming. And the more happy customers you have, the more you're likely to attract, don't you?
Yeah, you know, as you probably saw in the statement this morning, you know, we've just signed up Dubai Aquarium. Our four pods will be seated just outside the aquarium. So they'll be seated in the Dubai Mall, which is the largest shopping mall in the world with over 80 million visitors a year. So there's a lot of people going to see our offering just sort of going through there. You know, that aquarium is you know, one of the largest, if not the largest, sort of suspended aquarium in the world. It's got the largest concentration of sort of tiger sharks in the world. So our shark dive, where people can not only go and see the tiger sharks in real life, but they can then go and experience sort of, as I said, getting up close and personal with them on the VR pods, I think is a real, you know, first for them and a first for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Martin, one final thing. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, look, as I said before, you know, the VR sector, the immersive sector is absolutely, you know, here to stay. So it's a, you know, for us, it is one of the key drivers. I think the other key driver is, you know, we're in this exciting edutainment area. We are developing products that will help zoos, aquariums, and science centres attract sort of new visitors as they evolve. And I think the third thing is we're now putting the pieces of the jigsaw in place to build a very solid recurring revenue business. And I firmly believe that recurring revenue businesses, you know, will attract good values for shareholders in the months and years ahead.
Yeah, and I suppose you should add that if people were buying stock now, they'd be buying it around about the same price that you guys bought stock recently.
Yeah, I think we even paid a bit more than it's currently on the ticket. So, we're massive fans in this business. We continue to be big holders. And we're very excited about the future. So, yes, we've got a lot of skin in the game.
Marvellous stuff, Martin. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Lee, Non-Executive Director of Pires Investments. That's PIRI ticker. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here, Justin.
Now, we've got a couple of announcements out of late, and we'll dig into those in a bit. Before we do, Nick, as always, if someone's listening right now has never heard of Pires Investments, can you just summarise what you're about, please?
So Pires is an investment company listed on AIM. Historically, it's tending to invest in the natural resources space, and of late we've done particularly well because we invested in a very interesting company called Eco Atlantic, which I think when we invested the shares came to the market about 17p, and I think today they're about £1.60. So they've done incredibly well and have made some interesting finds out in Guyana. So that's principally what the company, the moment, its main investment is Eco. So its assets are Eco and a reasonable amount of cash.
Well, listen, I've had Gil Holzman on the podcast several times, so we know what Eco is about. Done very well, but now you're hoping to change your investment policy. Explain why this is.
So we sort of decided that made sense to expand the company's investing policy, and we've decided that a very interesting sector to go into is technology. Mm-hmm. So we've got an upcoming AGM, which will where we're seeking shareholder approval just to expand the policy to be able to cover investments in the tech sector. And what we've sort of also done is we've identified a very interesting investment to make, subject obviously shareholders approving that change in policy. And I can explain a little bit about that investment.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, so we're looking to subscribe into a venture capital fund called Shore Valley Ventures. This is a venture capital fund principally focused on the sort of software space, and it does VR, artificial intelligence, Internet of Things. And why we think this is an attractive first step into technology is that we are able to effectively invest in it, what I would describe as a sort of ready-made portfolio of tech, very interesting tech businesses, and we're able to invest on the sort of same basis as if we had been an original investor. So in a way, that sort of de-risks our investment because we've had just been 2 years of running of the fund, and so you can see how the various investments have been performing. To us, that's a sort of really quite a clever way of starting off into the tech sector. And within that portfolio, there's 10 companies in the portfolio. They're all sort of really quite interesting. I mean, one is already listed, a company called VRE. One is called Admix. It's very similar to quite a popular listed company called Bidstack. Mm-hmm. The fund has had sort of an offering for one of the other portfolio companies. So, we sort of been able to sort of see all of that before we invest. Again, it means that we are sort of de-risking our investment, which we think is very attractive.
And do you think that things generally, why have you got it for tech? Is it a pivot away from net resources or?
Well, I think. Yeah, I think we wanted to, as we sit here at the moment, we're sort of, we're natural resources stroke, really one company focused, and therefore it made a lot of sense to broaden that investment horizon. The reason we like tech is that, we can really see that there are, tech as a sector is one where you can make fantastic returns, multiples of your money. We're not talking 3 or 5 times, it's 50 times. It's if the tech is right, the sky is, it's almost unlimited in the returns that you can make. So we really, really like that. But obviously we wanted to try and do that in a way that just took on a sensible level of risk for our investors.
Okay. Excellent stuff. Well, let's move on to your recent market update. Take us through that if you could, Nick.
Yeah, so all we sort of just wanted to do is to make sure that, you know, that the market and investors were sort of clear as to, you know, what our current net asset position was. And we do these updates on a regular basis, you know, and we just wanted to make sure that people were clear about, in particular, you know, where we were valuation wise with Eco, because you know, since they had their first successful discovery, that share price has moved up quite a lot. So we put an announcement yesterday that basically just said that our NAV per share is about 4.2p, which, you know, is significantly higher than our current share price, and the share price moved up a little bit, but, you know, to my mind, it's a pretty low risk NAV because it's principally cash and Eco shares. So that went out yesterday just so that everybody was clear exactly what we sort of got within the company.
Yeah, absolutely. And when's the AGM then?
So the AGM is next Thursday.
Okay. And that will then seal that, hopefully, if you're the votes to change the investment policy?
Yes. Yeah. So we've effectively, you know, we've agreed to make the Shore Value Ventures investment just subject to, obviously, shareholder approval.
Okay, well, Nick, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing here, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that our decision to embark on investing in technology is very exciting, because of the sector itself, but also the way that we've decided to do it via investing in an established fund. And then I think, you know, and that's really 2 points. And then the third point is, you know, we are sitting here trading at quite a big discount to our underlying net asset value. So there's intrinsic value within the company, notwithstanding, you know, what we're about to embark on.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff. Nick, good to chat to you. And like you say, what's going on there? Big change happening. So hopefully we chat again in not too distant future. Yep. Thank you very much.
Yeah, very good. All right.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Petrol Resources, up 33.33% at 9.5 pence. PET, is a ticker there? All right, PET. At four, Mobility One, MBO, 18.9% up. They're up quite a big chunk yesterday, I think about 70%, were they? At three, SafeStay up 4.76%. Some cracking results from SafeStay, I thought, today. Really did. And very impressed by them. Generating cash, 16 hostels now, doing what they say they do. And very impressive. At two, Polarian. More good news from those. You know, Guy's the biggest shareholder there, which, you know, they're in trouble. Amphion Investments. I think it's Amphion Investments. It's the biggest shareholder. It's, you know, owes a lot of money and a loan, and they're financially sort of paralysed by that. All they can do is pay in shares. They don't want to pay in shares yet, though, because they see a lot more value in Polarian, but they've extended their loan. The loan was supposed to be paid end of this month, but now they've extended it for another year, which is good news. That means the selling in Polarian has happened, will slow down now, and it'll give way to good news, hopefully, released by Polarian before the end of this month. It doesn't matter if it's before the end of this month. They're heading in the right direction. That's Polarian, PLX. And at number one, people trying to catch a knife again, Metro Bank. Pointless. Most followed. Okay, top five most liked RNSs. Emotion Group. Invest in a company that's improving. Not one that's on the edge, you know, really had a shock, accounting shock, is trying to raise money, is in the middle of problems, hoping to catch a falling knife. You'll be cut. And you'll die, your investment portfolio. If you continue with that investment strategy, your portfolio of investments, your value, will die with 1,000 cuts. At five, Emotion Group, partnership update. At four, UK Oil and Gas, arrival of rig at Horse Hill. At three, SafeStay, half-year report. At two, assay results from Europa Metals. And number one most liked RNS came from Polarian Imaging, Polarian Notes statement from Amphion Innovations. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.